You're listening to The Practical Wealth Show with Curtis May.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of The Practical Wealth Show. So I have an outstanding guest, so we're blessed. So I have Mr. Neil Bawa, especially known by his friends as the mad scientist of multifamily. And so he's a technologist, an entrepreneur in love with the power of numbers to create profit for his real estate investors. He is CEO and founder at Grow Capitus, a commercial real estate investment company. Neil acquires commercial properties across the U.S. for over 800 plus investors. His current portfolio is over 1,800 units, beds, and over $150 million in value. The portfolio includes multifamily, student housing properties in 9 U.S. states. Neil, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on the show, Curtis. Looking forward to it.
Yes, my pleasure. Yep. Tell them what I didn't tell them, how you got into this, and then let's go there. So we give you a little, give them a little context.
Yeah, I can do a quick, I can spend a couple minutes on that.
Yeah.
I'm a technologist. I'm a data geek. I'm a, data scientist who realized that for a $4 trillion industry, real estate industry, mm-hmm. to be so insanely backwards, and for those of you that are in stocks, you're the perfect audience to be talking to, because you look at just how many technological innovations that have been in the stock market. You look at everything from Robinhood, that style of doing things. You look at, people doing day trading. The number of technological innovations in the stock market in the last 30 years has been staggering, right? 80-90% of all transactions are now done by, algorithms instead of human beings.
Right.
When you look at real estate, almost none of that technological innovation has taken place. So people like me that came from the world of technology wanted to come in and completely and utterly disrupt real estate, bring technology to real estate, and use all of the different aspects of technology, outsourcing, data, metrics, systems that no one has used before. And that's been my goal, and it has been my mission and my pleasure to bring that into commercial real estate. We run multifamily properties, and we use an astonishing array of technologies and systems and metrics. We buy and build multifamily properties. We do student housing, we do public storage. And I am delighted to inform you that there's an incredible amount of room for optimization here, where I think in the stock market, that has been kind of worked down to just, you can get maybe a couple percent here and a couple percent there. Whereas in the real estate market, especially in multifamily, you can get a 20 or 30% swing, which is a huge swing in revenue, right? 20% mm-hmm. swing in revenue can be a 100% swing in profit. By applying technology systems, by basically being more organized than this world that has just been this fat cat world for the last 30 or 40 years. So I'm happy to share that it's changing, but I'm also happy to share that there's a absolutely insane opportunity there that we continue to see. And, I've been engaging in this world for almost 10 years now.
Interesting. Okay. One of the things is that we talk to our clients about, if you want to create maximum wealth, most people think the key is to take more risks. But what I heard there is that there's opportunity, but the opportunity is to create more efficiencies. So what we teach is that to create maximum wealth, you have to create maximum efficiency too. And then you can spring out with the technology. It seems like what you're saying is what you're saying.
That is exactly right. I mean, okay. you hit it on the head. There's two ways of creating higher returns. One, take a higher level of risk and be okay with taking that risk. Second, change the methodology. Do something that is completely different and more optimized, right? So here's an example that you'll never hear anybody else, even if you go through 1,000 of these podcasts. Mm-hmm. So I have a property. It's about 235 units. And in multifamily, we're blessed in that if we create $1 of new net profit, the buyer, when we sell the property, gives us roughly 16 or 17 times that much money. This is called six cap, right? So most properties in the U.S. are five cap, six cap. So if they're five cap, like in San Francisco, there you might get 20 times or 25 times that money. So creating a dollar is an astonishingly profitable thing. So we are very motivated to create that additional incremental dollar of profit. Okay, so here's an example. This is a real example. So this 235 unit property, and this property happens to have 4K high resolution cameras. So they're like four times sharper than 1080p. Okay. Mm-hmm. And those cameras are pointing to the driveways and basically being used to solve crime in case, you know, there's a break-in or something. They're basically giving people pictures. None of that really has ever led to any reduction in crime that I'm aware of, but people do it all the time. Okay. Nothing against it. So here's what I did. I went into this property and I said, these are great 4K cameras. They're amazingly sharp and you can really zoom in. I want all these cameras moved from the driveways. I want them moved to the building itself. So now the cameras are looking at the walkways. So the property had external walkways. So as you walk up to your door, you know, camera can see you.
Right.
And so my partner's like, what? There's no purpose in doing that. So just trust me, give me a little bit of time. And then I have this virtual army in the Philippines, 18 full-time employees. They work Pacific Standard Times, 10 hours a day. So I assigned one of these people, her name's Donna. I said, Donna, what I want you to do is I want you to log in over the web into this server that's recording this stuff. And it's doing time lapse. So you can, you know, go through a lot of stuff very quickly because it's only recording when there's a person. And every time as you're going through, I want you to follow the people that are going up the stairs. Okay. And look at people. If they don't have a dog or a cat, just skip. Just click skip, 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 skip. Ooh, dog, right? So you see this person that's got a dog, right? And I want you to watch this person go up the steps. And then when they get to the landing, I want you to follow them going in either direction using a different camera, the one that's pointing to that area. And I want you to count from the staircase how many doors left or how many doors right this person's gone. That's going to tell you exactly which unit they're going into. And when they get to that, the front of that unit, and they fish out their keys, I want you to take a quick snapshot, like a screenshot. Then I want you to go into the property management software, figure out what that unit number is. Let's say it's unit number 122. And I want you to pull that up in the property management to see if the person is paying a pet fee.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I want you to check that, right? And if the person's not paying a pet fee, then the next steps are very simple. I want you to take the screenshot that you just took and email it to the property manager and letting them know unit number 231 just took a pet inside and here's a picture of the pet and the person. All right. We did this and it took us about 2 months with this whole property. For 2 months, every day she was spending a few hours, you know, we pay her $5 an hour. So she spent maybe 50 hours, 60 hours, something like that. So I spent $300 on this person. That was my total cost because the cameras were already there, right? So imagine that being my expense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what we gained, okay? So our pet fees at that property were about $40 a month. It's a pretty upscale property, okay? And we found about 40 people out of the 235 places, 40 people that had dogs or cats that were not in our system, not paying pet rent, okay? Human beings pay rent. So do dogs and cats. They scratch the flooring, they scratch the carpet, they damage the place. There's rent that has to be paid.
Yeah.
So as a result, Curtis, a month later, the same property had 40 new tenants paying $40 a month, which is $1,600 a month.
Yeah.
Which is $20,000 a year. Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now, my 5 years of ownership of this property, we've made 20, 20, 20, 20, and 20. That's $100,000 in cash flow for my investors.
Wow.
$100,000.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the small piece because the $20,000 a year that we're making, when we sell the property, we get 16 times that much at cap six.
Mm.
That's $320,000.
Yeah.
So we added $100,000 of cash flow and $320,000 of profit at the end on sale. $420,000 by paying $300 to a person in the Philippines and using existing cameras that were already there and thousands of apartment complexes already have them, right? We didn't need they were 4K, but even if they were 2K, you can usually tell, like the person knows they're caught, right? Because you've got a picture of them with their pet in their hand or the pet standing next to them, they're standing next to their door. 99% of the time, people don't dispute it. They're like, oh, okay, how much is the pet rent?
Right.
Right? And we tell people, I could have charged you pet rent according to my lease from the day that you took this property, but I'm going to be nice to you. I'm going to forgive you all the rent for the past. I'm only going to charge it from now onwards. So I'm a nice guy.
Right?
I'm a nice guy that just made somewhere around $420,000 for my investors by repointing cameras. Where's the risk in this, Curtis? Do you see any risk? Did I take
none,
any risk?
None whatsoever. So
now imagine this being applied 100 times more. And if you want, I'll give you another example, and it's just as good.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So I have properties in places that are very hot and places that are very cold. Now, lots and lots of very hot and very cold places have covered parking because, you know, you want covered car parking when it's very cold. You want covered parking, it's very hot. But most people, most properties, not every covered parking is sold. You know why? Because the property manager only makes 3%. So there's no reason for the property manager to go and sell a $30 covered parking space. Right? It's like, okay. Oh my God, it's not even worth the brain damage. So if somebody comes and asks me for a covered parking space, I'll give it to them. Right? But otherwise, I'm not spending my time selling it because I get 3% of $30, which is 90 cents. Is it worth my time? No. But if you happen to have an army in the Philippines like I do,
right,
and that army in the Philippines, when they come into work each day, they would look at every single property that we had and they would look for two things. Is it extremely hot or is it extremely cold at this property today? Like Utah is a perfect example. In the summer, Salt Lake City gets to 100 degrees.
Wow.
But in the winter, it's freaking freezing, right? You're going to, you really want, the snow comes down a foot at a time and just covers your whole car. So you want that covered parking space. So imagine the efficiency. First, we're using people in the Philippines. And second, they're only calling on 100 degree days or minus 10 degree days. Imagine and they're calling the tenant directly from the property management software and saying, hey, I have a covered parking space available, but other people want it. It's $30. Would you like it? Right? And so we spend maybe 2 hours making those phone calls once a month on these super cold, super hot days. $10, that's $100, $150 a year. Total amongst our portfolio, we're able to fill about 100 additional parking lots. That's 3,000 a month, 36,000 a year. Over a 5-year time frame, $180,000. That 36, multiply that by 16, that's $500,000. Now you're up to $800,000 for what? For 2 hours of a $5 an hour virtual assistant?
Right, right.
We're not making calls every day because it's not efficient.
Right.
Ultra hot, ultra cold, that's when people buy parking.
When you're thinking about it. See, that's brilliant because it's like, one, you have to think. See, most people just get in and they don't really, you know, Kiyosaki says that, you know, we are financial literacy's ability to read numbers, right? So you're, this is where the power of numbers, of being able to, the numbers tell a story, and can you interpret the story that is seeing and see the opportunities? It's kind of like when I reverse that portfolio, I do it in personal finance because what I do is different is I help people find money that they're losing unknown necessarily. So I focus on efficiency with our clients, but it's kind of like you sound like Neo at the end of the Matrix, right? You know, when at the end he's
conceived. I identify with Neo a lot because I mean, in the end, Neo could see the Matrix. He could see the pattern.
Yes.
And the ability to see the pattern, our world really has patterns. It's absolutely phenomenal. And being, I can see patterns where I'm like, why isn't somebody applying technology to this? Why isn't somebody applying virtual assistants to this? Because the return on investment, the ROI is 10x, 100x, 1000x.
Right.
I just gave you two examples of 1000x that you can apply to property tomorrow morning. But there's, even if there's a 10x return, I'll apply it. I'll apply it without hesitation.
Because Jay Abraham calls that geometry. So what you're doing, you're not adding, you're multiplying when you start stacking those returns up.
I like to 10X. So Mike's staff is constantly hearing this from me. How are we 10Xing this aspect? How are we 10Xing that aspect? And I encourage my staff to experiment and to fail. So, you know, our company celebrates failures because there's no way to get to success without failing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, think of success as the second floor, the third floor, and think of the failures as steps. No way to get to the second floor without climbing the steps.
Right.
So celebrating failure is key. Yes, we apply technology. Yes, we apply virtual assistants. But I think the biggest thing that we do is we experiment. And that's why I'm known as the mad scientist of multifamily. You know, it's a pretty large following. There's about 50,000 people around the US that follow us. They're not following us. They're following our bizarre thinking. Like the two examples that I gave you, those are both invented by us.
is there a point where the scale doesn't work? So let's say, like, I know I've got listeners that have, you know, 6 units, 15 units. I just talked to somebody that closed in a 49 unit. And I, matter of fact, I'm pretty sure they don't think about this. I might introduce you to them. But, you know, that kind of stuff. But if I'm starting out or I'm going into my most multifamily, what is your, how do you, when you doing your performer, do you see, does this stuff jump out at you? Like, how do you train your brain to see this stuff or see the opportunity?
Constant experimentation. I think the key is when you start to experiment, you start to read the pattern, right? Okay. Neo, mm-hmm. It took him a while until the end of the first movie before he could actually see the pattern.
Yeah.
But he could feel it at the very beginning, right? So from going to feeling to seeing is a process of constant experimentation, trying different things, because you've got to try a bunch of things and fail at them for you to start getting better at figuring out which thing is 10x and which thing is 100x, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And the honest answer is, so I want to go back and answer your question. 6-unit portfolio, try it. 49-unit portfolio, try it. I'm getting 100x multiples, but even if you get 5x,
right.
5x is a phenomenal return. Because you don't get 5x returns in the stock market. You don't get 5x returns in real estate. You get 5x returns, incremental returns in the using something phenomenal in the stock market or using something phenomenal in the real estate. These are all incremental. They're stacked on top because your cost is fixed. Your mortgage is fixed, right? When you're buying a stock, the stock price is fixed. So these incremental things is where the magic happens. That's where the magic is. And to me, even with 5 units, you'd get a return on investment, which normally, let's say you forget Neil Bawa, you never talk to Neil Bawa. If somebody said, if you do this much work and you get this much return, will you go for it? You're going to say yes. Well, that's what it is for that 5 units. It's still a big yes. For me, it's just a bigger yes. I'm all about scale. So to me, you know, I can't wait to have a 1,000 unit multifamily. I mean, I have multifamilies that are 100 units, 150 units, 250 units. But I want to get to massive city-sized multifamily so I can experiment more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's just about how you see the world, like about, you know, optimization, and you just have to train your brain. Because what I like about real estate and other asset classes, you know, like, because you could apply the same thing to business. Now, when I'm saying that of looking at how you can optimize your assets within your business, there's really a thought process, but the difference between that and the stock market is control. You know, you have the ability, you created, you influence the cash flow and the profitability. And I think, I don't know that you can do that with equities.
I don't think so. I don't believe so. I have an anecdote for you. I think this is a great time to talk about the difference between equities, the stock market, and real estate. Mm-hmm. Because we look at this whole COVID situation and really hit hard around March 10th this year, right? Around March 10th, you know, March 1st, OpenTable was showing regular reservations. Yeah. March 20th, OpenTable had no reservations anywhere in the US. So in that 20-day time frame, we went from millions of reservations to zero in restaurants, right? So that's when it hit. And since then, when you look at what is happening in the marketplace, the question you have to ask yourself is, what do I want to invest in? Do I want to invest in something that is common sense? It makes sense. And when I apply logic, I can say, yep, that's the kind of result I should get, and that's what I'm getting. Let's first take the stock market. So the first part of the stock market, everything made sense. You know, equities just fell off a cliff. They went down 30, 40%. They're going down 1,000 points every day. The first part of that is, it's so insanely, you know, one's so insanely fearful when one's invested in equities. Every one of those days is torture. You can't work. You can't think. You're constantly tied to your computer looking at your E-Trade account because the paranoia is driving you nuts, right? And imagine Neil in that time frame, just as afraid. I mean, I was just as afraid as any stock investor because I didn't know what was going to happen to my real estate portfolio. Was it going to fall off a cliff? So I had the same fears as a stock market person in March. But then at the end of March, I had more information than the stock market guy does. And the stock market at that point turned sometime in April and started to do bizarre things. It started to climb at very high speed. And it started to climb even as we went from 3.5% unemployment to 14% unemployment. It started to climb as we spent $2 trillion of money that we didn't have. We just printed it out of thin air. That caused the stock market to go up. You look at all of those things and you go, If I was a logical person, there's no reason for the stock market to go back up, and now it's back up all the way. While we are in the middle of what many people, many smart people are describing as a depression, something that'll take 5 years to recover the economic performance, stock market's back up. So to me, it seems like the stock market, whatever methodology it uses to value equities, it is not intuitive, it is not logical. And maybe there's a computer program somewhere that costs billions of dollars that can say, oh yeah, I could have predicted that. But I don't think that the vast majority of stock investors had any clue about this. Now contrast that with real estate during the same time frame. So I had this horrible, terrifying March. But at the end of March, I look at my tenants. Most people pay rent. So okay, that's fine. I'm now terrified for April, but I'm a little less terrified. Okay, right. I'm getting to the point where I'm, you know, this may not be the end of the world. And so by April 10th, money starts to come in from my tenants. And, you know, maybe a few of them, I've given them concessions. Some of them have payment plans. And a few of them are, we're giving them $25 gift cards to pay on the on the first, little things.
Right.
And more than 95% of the money that we gathered in March came in April. Great. We're feeling a little bit better. We're not going nuts. We're not in a heart attack zone. Then we look at May. And across the board, everywhere in the United States, apartment complex gathered more money in May than they did in April. And in June, across the board, they're on track to gather more money in June than they did in May, right? So we're seeing an upward trend on already an extremely existing, heavy existing market. And we probably won't be distributing 8% cash in Q3. We'll probably be distributing 4% cash.
Right.
But contrast that to people in the stock market. I had an investor, I'm just going to use his first name. His name's Mark. And Mark is worth about 10 million bucks. His stock portfolio went down 30%. And instead of holding on to it, he sold it. He lost 3 million bucks. 30% of his net worth is gone. Whereas his real estate assets, which are with me, more than $1 million worth, basically nothing's changed except the fact that now we have a marketplace that has $4 trillion of fake printed money,
right,
more than it did in February, which all of us know creates asset bubbles.
That's right.
Which all of us know is going to benefit at real estate at some point in the future. Probably not this year.
Right.
It's probably going to go down a little bit.
Because that money's got to go somewhere.
That money goes somewhere.
It's going to drive
money.
Appreciation. Yeah.
When money is created by Congress or by the Fed, money is not created. It is loaned into existence. It is always a loan. Right. So the government creates it by selling treasury bonds. The Fed creates it basically by loaning money into the banking system. When money is loaned, there's a value to that loan, yet there's money that has to be paid. Therefore, it needs yield. And it needs that yield is right now not there anywhere else. You can't put the money in the bank and make, you know, anything. Right now, we're making zero. So then that yield ends up going into riskier assets like real estate and stocks and Bitcoin and all those kinds of things. So we tend to benefit from that. Well, we have a $4 trillion injection of that money into that fake money into the real economy. That's going to benefit us in the future.
Yeah.
Right? That's where real estate stands. Whereas with stocks, if you sold in April, you know, you lost 20, 30%. I think never have I seen such a clear demarcation of value and stress and logic as I've seen in the last 2 or 3 months.
Right. I think that's a great point. It's so great to hear you say that because a lot of times I don't see that, at least with smaller real estate investors, they don't really think from a macro standpoint to understand, you know, the Fed did this. Well, yes, over here, it's going to affect your real estate portfolio. Because you're not seeing the matrix, the pattern. You're just focused on this thing and not seeing how, you know, because everything you do affects everything else you do. So we teach our clients, you got to think from a macro standpoint so that you can see what I call the whole playing field. And so it's really cool that you teach your students that.
Yeah, we have Multifamily University, which is multifamilyu.com. We get about 50,000 data-driven investors, real estate investors that come in. A lot of them come in because we teach, you know, business techniques using virtual assistants, using virtualization. Today, as I mentioned, I have 1,300 people tonight that have signed up to attend a webinar where I'm teaching my virtual assistant techniques. So anyone that's interested can learn from multifamilyu.com. There's nothing to sell at this site. People come in, they take webinars by experts. We were trying to create a Wikipedia-type feel like you go to Wikipedia, Wikipedia doesn't bother you. That's what we were trying to create with multifamily at multifamilyuniversity.com. That's multifamilyu.com.
Okay. So we will definitely put that in the show notes. I know you got to run because you got a bunch of stuff to do this evening. Anything I should have asked you that I didn't, or any closing words of wisdom for my listeners?
All I want to say is I would say that the Bible got it wrong by one letter. Folks, it is not the meek that shall inherit the earth. It is the geek. It is the geek.
Okay,
richest man in the world, geek. Second richest geek. Third richest geek. Curtis, you see a pattern here? You see
a pattern? I do.
Yes. And I think that when you look at the fact that Bezos can give his wife $37 billion in a divorce and still remain the richest man in the world, you have to understand that the haves and the have-nots today are separated by only one thing, their use of technology. Mm. Understand that that is the world that we live in. 50 years ago, you know, you got rich if you lived in Texas near an oil well. Today, you can get rich anywhere in the world. The oil well is in your room. It's on Zoom. It's on your computer, and it's called technology. And anyone can mine it. And it's such a deep well that pretty much all of the top five companies in the world, which now have all of them are larger than most countries in the world, are all tech companies.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, you got to, you know, these things are not for just to play games and to be on Facebook. You got to learn how to use this stuff to make money, you know.
Yep. And I'm using it in real estate, but tomorrow I think I might go out and use it to sell stuff on Amazon. It doesn't matter. I think that the key is, once you know how to use technology to accelerate your business 10x, then what your business is really is not important.
Yep, that's it. And see, so, and one of the things I'm trying to bring across, there's just two schools of thought in finance. There's the accumulation, buy and hold, dollar cost average, get out of debt, invest in mutual funds. And what Neil has described is his version of what I call the velocity method, money like speed, you know, and leverage. And so that's all I heard today. Okay, so I want you, so this is the pattern, guys. I want you to hear this and apply this. You can apply stuff to your real estate, your business, that he says, because business is business. It doesn't matter. You've got it. You know, good idea doesn't care who has it. You've got to take it and figure out how to apply. You can't say, well, this won't work for me. The question is, how could this work for me? You got to start asking your brain the right questions. So, Neil, thank you so much. That was awesome. And I will definitely be checking out the university, and hopefully we can delve into some more. You know, we have some more time, but this was phenomenal. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on the show, Curtis. Thank you.
Yes, my pleasure. Thanks for being on the Practical Wealth Show, folks. So listen, like, and share. We're gonna have all of Neil's information in the show notes, and go out there and make it a prosperous day.
Thanks for listening to Practical Wealth. To access the show notes and resources, go to practicalwealthshow.com. To get your questions on the show, go to practicalwealthshow.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before you make any investment decisions, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by Practical Wealth. Written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.